then parts of this waste come back again in the various materials that are used for the continual survival of life. The water is a little contaminated. The air is a little contaminated. And we have to drink that water and breathe that air, and we become a little more contaminated. The same thing is true of our psychic natures. If the psychic field of our planet is corrupted, if the vibratory energies are polluted, then the human being who has to depend upon these energies for his own survival is receiving into himself vibratory energies that are not pure. Part of Plato's concept of the periodic eras of sterility and fertility in nature, and perhaps is the vibratory answer to the East Indian concept of the Kala Yuga. Here we have a situation in which we breathe in death, that we take in upon ourselves the final summation of the endless streams of energy that are flowing into this great final reservoir of the Earth's vital supply. If this is not kept clean, if this is not purified, if human beings do not change their own ways, they will ultimately find that this is another form of selfishness, just as suicidal as refusing to curb industries, the fumes and smog and smoke of which may endanger physical life. Nature apparently finally comes to these impasses in which forms, energy forms, vital forms, etheric forms, what we might almost call demon forms, fashioned out of the very archetypal vibratory cores that we create, become like fixations or complexes within our own natures. And these archetypal negation energy patterns can, in time, produce physical phenomena. Just as surely as, for example, a gradual accumulation of mental and emotional stress within the individual may end in a stroke or a coronary, so in the earth, this gradual building up of psychic tension, psychic stress, may end in the equivalent of this ailment in the body, perhaps an earthquake, perhaps a great electric storm, or if the corrupting influences of this psychic situation become too great, a world epidemic, a vast plague, a pestilence, or something of that nature. We are beginning to suspect a long-range program in sickness. We are beginning to realize that diseases gradually die out as world conditions improve. We are quite convinced, therefore, that while we are taking a great deal of credit for discovering remedies for ailments, that it is not so much the discovery of a remedy for an ailment as it is the correction of a basic weakness in society that finally combats epidemical disease. We know, for example, that in the last 100 years, certain diseases have been reduced markedly. The last 5 years, we have treated them with specific materials, either by inoculation or something of this nature. And we feel very proud of the fact that we have only a fraction as much of this sickness now as we had 100 years ago. But let us be thoughtful and realize that the disease had 90% corrected itself before the first inoculation was given. We'll say that in 1860 there were 1,000 cases of a certain ailment. In 1960 there were only 20. We take great credit for this. In 1950, the first inoculations were given for this ailment. But in 1940, it had already been reduced to a fragment of its previous rate. So the progress was not made in the last 10 years, but over a gradually improving condition of nutrition, hygiene, levels of human life, strengthening of natural defenses. And it is only at the terminal stage that the most spectacular remedies have been applied. It's the same thing in our psychic life. These problems always solve themselves through the gradual correcting of causes. We realize, for example, the terrible influenza epidemic that followed World War I and destroyed more than the war. This undoubtedly was related to a tremendous situation in nature. Statistics have been gathered which would indicate clearly that nearly all of the world's great natural disasters have followed within 5 years of a great human disaster, have followed after wars, persecutions, intolerances, and corruptions of mankind. So it is quite possible that there is a relationship between so-called natural disaster and the conduct of man, and that this relationship is a valid one and is another indication of the fact that we cannot live badly and do well. They're just not possible in this universe of which we are a part. In the same general way of approaching this problem, we realize that human beings have either mystically or otherwise have sensed this situation, at least to a degree. For into the moral atmosphere of our world has also ascended from the dawn of time the prayers of simple, gentle, contrite, devout persons. Man has sensed some way the cleansing power of prayer, of meditation, of thought, of uniting with others of his kind in thought of peace or of health or security or common good. We have sensed always that where many are gathered together in a common thought, this thought has power. It has been used from the beginning of history in the healing of the sick and in other spiritual mysteries. The mystery of ordination, the mystery of consecration and of confirmation are all mysteries in which several gather together to confirm or to confer a blessing, and that this blessing is intensified by the number of those that are present on the occasion. Therefore, where several are gathered together, there is a new sense of strength or virtue or value. This again appears to indicate the power of vibration to build up, to consecrate or to increase a good power, a power for reality. Now we know that in all vibratory matter, everything that exists in nature is essentially good. What we call a bad vibration is not something essentially evil. It is a misuse, an abuse, a false use of energy. It is the individual imposing upon nature an inharmonious pattern, just as we can say that a discord of sound is an injury or an affront to the ears. that the individual, by creating discord, creates pain, creates sorrow. Yet we cannot say that the sounds themselves are evil. We must say that in their combination they are evil. Or in the rhythmic patterns that are set up, there is lack of order, or lack of harmony, or lack of proper timing or patterning of either energy or sound. So we have the distinct realization that what we call negative vibrations are storms set up on the surface of a quiet sea. The inner part of man is not storm-ridden. The moment the individual relaxes away from pressure, he becomes normal. The moment he does not force the storm to exist, the storm abates. The storm is really man fighting desperately to force a false condition upon himself. And as man himself is a more or less stratified being, we can say that in the core of every human being there is peace. That far beneath the surface of the agitation set up by thought and emotion, there are vast depths of calmness where discord or inharmony cannot reach. Therefore, it is essentially the surface of man that is agitated. And by surface, we mean the more superficial of his attitudes, or the more superficial of his emotions. The individual is disturbed from the outside and from the pressure of externals moving in upon his internal life. Nearly everything has been pointed out in philosophy that disturbs man is traceable to his material situation. In other words, he is selfish, but he is not really honestly selfish because he wants to be wiser or more beautiful or more noble than somebody else. He is selfish because he wants what other people have right here. He is selfish because he wants more possessions, more luxuries. He is selfish because he wants his own opinion to be more important in a world of fools. He is selfish because he is self-centered, and the only self he knows is the one he sees in the physical mirror, not the one he sees in the psychic glass. So his hates are keyed to physical things. The people have wronged him here. His political agitations are due to the political parties that are running this world, not some other world. Practically all of his difficulties and his miseries are due to the adjustment between himself and the physical world in which he lives. He is neglected, he is forgotten, he is forlorn, he is deserted by his children, he is poor, he is sick, all having to do with physical situations or moral interpretations of them. Thus, we say, only the superficial part of man's nature is moved or stirred by these strange pressures that become psychotic situations in his psyche. To the degree that the individual relaxes away from the highly competitive pressures of material existence, the storms within himself quieten. And when the storms within us cease, and the ocean becomes calm, we can then become aware of the great motions and currents that are in the sea itself. We discover that there are natural laws, natural ways, natural principles, natural energies, natural ebbings and flowings of tides. And that if we unite our resources with these universal motions, we are like the Taoist, who finds in the endless motion of Tao not only the greatest peace, the greatest security, but here the great stream that flows on and on to final unity with truth itself. So the problem is that to relax the pressure of these false values, and this is the key to reducing negative vibratory patterns. Of course, we have made a great emphasis upon the negative because the negative is what is harmful. We have also done it because in the majority of instances, the life is not well enough integrated for the positive to predominate. But it is only fair to point out that every constructive emotion, every constructive thought, becomes the basis of a more beautiful and harmonic pattern within ourselves. That is why we can constantly increase in grace and spiritual virtue. It is perfectly possible for us to build magnificent thought forms, magnificent emotion forms of sublime proportions and shapes. It is quite possible for the inner life to be tremendously harmonious, with really nothing there that can shade or shadow our natural peace of soul. We have the perfect right to achieve this. This achievement is not the ultimate, but it is a middle ground. It is the Paradiso of Dante, this mysterious realm of semi-terrestrial beauty which is between earth and heaven. But it is perfectly possible for us to have this Paradiso within ourselves. In fact, there's no other place where we can have it. Here we discover that intuition and the more sublime and noble instincts of life create a world of luminous energy forms. That it is perfectly possible for us to create vibratory patterns that overwhelm us with their beauty of form and color and sound and order. That truly, like Pythagoras, we can hear the music of the spheres. And like the great composers, can capture out of space the wonderful melodic lines which are going to later develop into symphonies and operas and great works of music. It is perfectly possible for the individual, therefore, to constantly build up creative concepts. And these creative concepts, these great patterns of creative and inspirational life, take the place of the conflicts that we normally suffer from. A complex is nearly always something that is complicated, which is the beginning of trouble. A complex has come to mean to us a false attitude. Therefore, we have to now contrast it with conviction, which becomes a constructive attitude. In each of our lives, we are either ruled by complexes or by convictions, either by positive or negative forces within our own consciousness experience. When we create a conviction, we create something of beauty that becomes an inner leader of our lives. A conviction, therefore, becomes a purposeful way of guidance. It inspires us to some continuing nobility or to the advancement of some more sublime value, whereas the complex simply leads us from one difficulty to another that is greater. But we have to have, at our stage of evolution, being the imperfect creatures that we are, we have to have direction. We have to go either up or down. We have to have meaning or no meaning of some way by which we have a contrast of values. We are either living with a good purpose or a bad one. We either have a vision beyond the commonplace or we live without this vision. There has to be these contrasts. And wherever the contrast is a negative one, wherever the negative factor dominates, the life gets worse. Conditions become more oppressive, and the patterns of health and survival are threatened. Another point that has come up in connection with this type of thinking is the possibility of these magnetic fields going to war on each other, or having a strong and powerful influence on each other. We know from psychometry, for example, that when a person walks through a room, a certain amount of their etheric or vibratory energy is left in that room. It remains even for a greater time in objects that have belonged to them. And in primitive magic and witchcraft and sorcery, much was made of the importance of the sorcerer possessing something that had belonged to the potential victim, something that contained the energy, or in some way was a magnetic tie by means of which a person at a distance could be reached on the basis of vibration. The concept here being that each living organism has a unique vibratory pattern, made up not only of its natural core pattern, which is its spiritual identity, but also the modifications of this pattern by the various attitudes and conditions of life. So there was this belief that there was a means of communication set up, a kind of radio or wireless communication by which it was possible to control or influence anything if we possessed something belonging to that person that contained that person's energy, that person's mana or orenda, the life principle of that person. That is one of the reasons why most primitive people do not want to be photographed. They fear that anyone who possesses their photograph can control them by their likeness, that the appearance of a person can therefore be of the greatest danger if another person wishes to use it for magical means. We no longer highly favor this point of view or regard it as essentially valid. Experimentation seems to point out that a very great part of this kind of diabolism is due to the fear that is set up in the heart and mind of the victim. Experience shows, and research shows, and I've done some research in the field myself, that in nearly every instance the victim is told in advance or informed in some way that he is about to be assailed. This seems to be the real cause of the damage, because he begins to disintegrate from his own fears. And then some brouhaha or witch gains the reputation for having achieved this evil work. But there is one thing that is definitely provable and demonstrable in nature, and that is that these different energy rates do have effect on people, and people affect each other. This is nothing especially esoteric or especially remarkable. It is simply the motion or movement of spheres of over-influence up from one level of life to another. There are a great many people in this world who live for only one reason, and that's to over-influence somebody. If their advice is not always followed, if they are not allowed to dominate every situation, they're just plain peeved. And if they are rebuffed a few times, they become neurotic, because they really believe that they were predestined and foreordained to make other people do what they want them to. Also, there are folks who just live for the purpose of being over-influenced. Sometimes it's because they are weak and do not want to make decisions, that they have been weakened by early childhood situations. They have not been allowed to grow up. Sometimes they have no desire to grow up. It's much easier to blame other people for your troubles. And anyone who advises you must take the responsibility of what happens to you if you follow the advice. But anyway, this problem of influencing and over-influencing persons, either obviously or subtly, either by open word or action, or by some mysterious subtle process such as auto-suggestion, suggestive therapy, or hypnosis. All these different processes represent degrees by which it is obvious that people can and do influence each other. Probably they shouldn't, but they do. And one thing is obvious, that if parents do not influence children, so much the worse for the child in the majority of cases. So that there are certain influence patterns that are more or less necessary in nature. Psychic influence is not so very different. Individuals can communicate without word or without ordinary means of communication. We can feel the thoughts of other people. We can be influenced by associations with various types of persons. We can take on attitudes from other people. Very subtly, very mysteriously, yet actually very obviously. Simply because there is this communication between energy fields. Communication made more subtle by sympathies. Also, there can be cases in which two persons have vibratory cores so similar that they can communicate with each other over considerable distances. There are cases of this recorded in history involving persons strongly attached by emotional bonds, and also examples in identical twins, where the one person seemingly, practically, thought with the thoughts of the other person. How to explain some of these things without vibration, without energy, and without some form of telepathy would seem to be rather difficult, but some people are still trying to work it out on a purely physical basis. Actually, there is no reason to question that we do have subtle means of communication, that this communication can move in upon our subconscious just as surely as it can upon our conscious. And we feel that we are greatly at a disadvantage because if it moves in on the subconscious, we are not consciously able to meet it. We are therefore subject to being adversely affected without our knowledge. This is a common belief, and it's a great convenience to suspect that someone else is ruining our disposition. It's nicer to feel that than to admit that we're ruining it ourselves, which is usually the fact. But though it is true that we do not have physical means of protecting ourselves from psychic energy, we do have the proper psychic means for protecting ourselves from psychic malpractice of any and all kinds. In other words, this magnetic field, this mysterious auric egg with which we are surrounded, has a complete defensive mechanism of itself. It is like the shining armor of Christian in Pilgrim's Progress. It is a strong defense against any evil that might naturally come to us. Actually, nature has so set up this situation that unless the individual destroys his own defenses, it is practically impossible for him to suffer from psychic malpractice. The only reason he can suffer from it is the same reason that he can suffer from certain physical ailments only if his own energy fields are run down. The greatest promise of health is the maintenance of a healthy body, that is physical health. The greatest promise of psychic and emotional and psychological health is the maintenance of a healthy psychic integration. Against this, there is almost nothing that can do any harm. The only way we can get into trouble on the psychic plane is by opening ourselves to trouble by some wrong action of our own. Now, this isn't always a very comforting thought if it's already happened. Perhaps we feel that we were wrong at some point along the way, at least we were foolish, but we have regretted the situation seriously, and we have done everything we could think of to get into a new relationship with this situation, and still it lingers on to perturb us. Therefore, we begin to feel that we are the victims of injustice. We are not the victims of any injustice at all. What we term, perhaps, in our way, psychic invasion of our privacy. The possibility that some outside energy is moving in on us actually calls to our attention only one very simple process. That the only way in which this can happen is that our own proper psychic defenses have not been restored, and that therefore we have to restore them. To say that we can't is to say that we can't stop eating something that makes us sick physically. To say that we just simply cannot make these changes in ourselves that are necessary to restore psychic integration is to assume that we cannot do what is necessary to protect our own lives. If we cannot do these things, then again our own weakness and not the strength of circumstances is the principal problem. I've known many, many instances of so-called claimed psychic invasion of our people's lives. I've never yet found one case where the invasion was major. It was not a well-planned strategy. The invading force was miserably weak. The only reason it succeeded at all was that the invaded territory was still weaker. The individual was not the victim of some great, big, strong, evil force. He was a victim of something of the proportions of a rat that had found a hole in his psychic integration. The whole situation could only arise from the extraordinary lack of organization of the victim. But the victim, instead of rising to meet the emergency, simply demoralized, infinitely magnified and distorted the whole situation, made a mountain out of a molehill, and frightened himself out of his wits. This so-called influence is going on all the time. Every one of us is constantly a field of vibratory activity and, to a measure, vibratory conflict. I don't know how many of you have been entranced or intrigued by the Beatles. This Great Britain's revenge for Elvis Presley. Actually, for all we know, they may be singing at this moment over some radio station, and the vibration is moving through us right now. But it's not going to bother us much. We're not even going to know it's happening. While we sit here, the air around us is filled with advertisements for shaving lotions, electric razors, and constant and repeated warnings that if we fail to use the right shampoo, all our friends will know it. What does it mean? Nothing. We're not suffering. Around us at this moment are the thoughts of millions of people. Some of these thoughts are bouncing off of our own magnetic fields, and others are passing through unnoticed. We are constantly in a sea of vibration. Vibrations coming from stars so remote that even their light does not reach us as far as our visual powers are concerned. Sounds coming across billions of light years. We can't hear them. But this universe is one absolute network of energies, divided into innumerable bands, every band filled with vibration in all of its parts. And actually, space is capable of giving us a still greater infinity of bands to be used by every conceivable vibratory length that we can know of now or discover ever in the history of our scientific or psychological progress. These things are here all the time. But man, by the very nature of his own structure, is given a wonderful protective mechanism. No matter how many thoughts other people send against us, it doesn't do a thing unless we insist on letting it, forcing ourselves to receive these vibrations that we then turn around and feel. So if the individual follows the simple concepts of Zen and is quiet and relaxed and at peace with life, refusing to combat evil with evil, refusing to acknowledge the right of destructiveness to perturb the natural serenity of the human spirit, these vibrations move right on through. They do not stop unless we capture them by setting up polarities for them in ourselves. The moment we are selfish, all the selfishness in the universe can move in on us because we have set up a pole for this selfishness. The moment we are frightened, all the negative fears of millions of creatures, animate and inanimate, can in some mysterious way find their echoes and their pressures within our own souls. If we are superstitious, all the superstitions of the ages can reach us. But if we are simply controlled, directed, disciplined, integrated people, the only thing that we can receive will be vibration of that quality. The reason why we are open to negation is because of the negation in us. And the only way we can rise above this situation is to transmute this negation into a neutral or natural force which does not attract that which is not desirable. One of the reasons why infinite numbers of vibrations move through us all the time and we do not know it is because these vibrations do not concern us. They are not for our use or for our need. Some of them may concern some parts of ourselves, but about these parts of ourselves we may also be completely ignorant. Those vibrations which relate to our spiritual life and our spiritual survival, we know nothing about. They are useful to the spirit, but the mind and the emotions cannot capture even their meaning. Therefore, if a vibration is not for us, it doesn't touch us. And it's not for us unless we deserve it. We must deserve it by making the mistakes that bring the negative ones or setting up the positive situations that bring the positive ones. If we do these things correctly, if we build the right polarities within ourselves, we then realize some of the benefits of growth. For it is from discipline and insight and wisdom and understanding that we set up the psychic symbols within our own subconscious, which are nourished and fed by the constructive forces of life. If we plant a seed of psychic good in our own souls, nature will nourish that seed and will help it to grow. And we will become gardeners in this psychic garden. And we will do everything we can to make sure that this little psychic plant of beauty grows. We will keep away the weeds. We will see that it is properly trimmed and properly guarded so that it may blossom and fulfill its purpose. And life itself will supply the ultimate energy to make this little plant grow and flower and bear its fruit. Nature will support all that is good. And therefore, if we will plant the right seeds in our psychic nature, they will grow. If, however, we let the psychic nature go to weed, we will have that problem. Not because weeds are bad. Weeds are all right. Weeds are very good, useful things. But they're not good in our psychic lives. They're not good when we are trying to grow something else. And if we neglect the psychic life, it will go to useless weeds, useless as far as we are concerned, because they choke out the life we are attempting to develop. If, however, we do the right thing, create the right internal life, these psychic patterns and vibratory polarities will develop properly, and we will observe the unfoldment of our own psychic lives as magnificent archetypal forms, symphonic in sound, glorious in color, and perfectly mathematical and orderly in design. We will understand that truly this magnificent geometric solid that Plato describes as the human soul. It all depends upon what we do with it. And the whole problem of the so-called negative psychic situation is just part of our experience need. But just as surely as we must learn not to break physical laws if we want to survive in this world, so we must also learn not to break psychic laws if we want to be happy and well-adjusted as psychic beings. We have to earn our happiness in this life, and we have to earn our psychic inner happiness through keeping the laws governing the uses of energy, and by recognizing that we must be the alchemist, the mystic chemist, and transform the mysterious vibratory patterns of life from base patterns into pure patterns. That we must develop the discriminations and the insight, the creative interests, the creative attitudes, the constructive outlets, by means of which we can keep the psychic life happy, keep it normal, keep it growing, keep it beautiful. If we do that, we will have well-adjusted inner lives, and we will build magnificent forms of energy instead of complexes. We will truly build magnificent constructive conviction forms that are noble, gracious, and suitable to live with. Then, like the ancestors of the ancient Chinese, we shall live good lives every day, and we shall sleep without disturbing dreams. And these are the laws governing this situation, and if we keep the rules will keep us. If we break the rules, we will be punished. And this is true just as much of our inner life as it is of our outer circumstances. Well, time is up, so I guess that's all for this evening.